We talked about models. We talked about how you build models to study complex systems. I'm going to talk about infrastructure particularly, and then say a little bit about what sorts of things that we have done and some of the technologies that we have developed for doing complex modeling. Say a little bit of conclusions. And then there's some references at the end and some details on methods at the end of the slides. The slides I have on a thumb drive, and I can pass them out to anybody who wants them. But basically, what we're trying to do is build embedded systems with the flexibility to adapt to changing conditions. Now, because I mostly don't build systems in the real world, I want as much flexibility as possible so I can figure out how it works later. However, that doesn't work if you're trying to get anything that's going to go fast enough. The problem is that flexibility is in direct opposition to speed, because flexibility requires you to make decisions at runtime, and that requires you to know enough to make those decisions. So there's a conflict. Every different application is going to want a different balance of those things, and almost all the applications I've seen take a single ad hoc choice of where that balance is and do the implementations that way. What I'm trying to offer is a way of studying the infrastructure so that you can study the infrastructure to figure out where the balance might be, so that you have a more generic way of approaching this kind of problem. Now, the issue is, how do you study integration infrastructure without making too many assumptions? I'd really like to make no assumptions, but instead of that, I make some assumptions. I'll show you what they are, and show that any one of them can be replaced. And the whole point of that is that you can have any set of assumptions about your infrastructure that you choose. And that's the basic technology underlying this. Also, I'm all about models. But we spend a lot of time modeling systems at the level of the target system, and not so much about these other things. Whereas the execution platform, now that is becoming much more prevalent as we're getting into lots of different kinds of embedded systems with tiny little computers. The execution environment. What is this environment going to do to me that I have to be able to either avoid or compensate for? Finally, the expected uses of the system, what's called the concept of operations in government systems. I don't think there's any system we use that we don't know how to break by using it incorrectly. And the problem is that the system has to help you figure out that that's what's happening so that it can avoid it. So we need models of all of these things. Now, once we have models, now I'm not going to say modeling is easy, because it never is. It's just that is a hard piece. What we're going to offer is a way of organizing models that will help you do this kind of balance assignment. But you can also use the models for platform calibration, not just for system construction, to learn platform timing details. There is no processor definition in the world that is either correct or complete. You cannot know that in advance. I had a friend who was telling Intel things about their cache that they did not know because of the way he was measuring it. You can't assume, here's the requirements, here's my platform, oh, here's my system. You have to be able to try it out. Fault monitoring. One of the weird things about the real world, you know, the difference between hardware and software is that software only breaks when you do maintain it. Things wear out. Your hardware tomorrow is not going to be the same as your hardware today. In the space business, you got 10 years of hardware to worry about. When we don't have to spend $100 million to replace something, it's easier to maintain it a little more often. But no matter what kind of hardware you have, it will wear out, and you will need some kind of fault monitoring if you want your system to last for a while. Execution. So my approach here is you start with some very abstract models of what you want the system to do, plus these other issues, and try to target, gradually specialize those models to target platform implementations, to move it piece by piece by piece, with guaranteed behavior performance across the different levels. So if I have a model and something is supposed to occur in a few seconds at this abstraction level, when a refinement, that becomes a requirement on the next level of model, and an observation of that level of model that we can see if it does in fact fit that, or if we can maybe relax the timing. But the idea is to keep these mappings among the different models. Not, here's my system description, I'll make a refinement, throw that one away. So I only have one at a time. I want all of them together so that I can move up and down in this abstraction hierarchy. But we also need to instrument these things. We expect to learn from our models, or I expect to learn from my models. Otherwise, what's the point? I need to learn about their interaction and conflict behavior. I need to learn about their timing characteristics. I need to learn a whole bunch of things about the system to help me build it. Now, if I have predictive timing distributions, if I know enough about the processors or the processes involved, then I can greatly narrow the behavior space. We have a great tendency to have a simply described behavior space that's way too big to study. If you think about the way you search, say you're looking for certain kinds of information, we don't search the big n-dimensional cube space. We have a search algorithm that depends on the thing we're looking for and the context of it. Much more difficult to describe, but much simpler to explore. Timing requirements, timing expectations. We're going to start with expectations for our system and gradually move them into observable definitions and or requirements for lower level pieces, and then aggregate the observations back up. Bringing observations of actual times and timing variations, this is especially true with our complex processors now, we have lots of timing variations. I have this dream that eventually the processors themselves will get simpler so that they have predictable timing, which would be much more useful for real-time systems. The problem is that in order to make them go fast enough, they have all kinds of different complications. Timing improves, helps improve. Okay. Well, the difficulty with any instrumentation, of course, is that it interferes with normal operation. If I'm keeping track of something, then I'm taking time to do that, and my normal operation time may suffer. So that's another reason for models. So there's two difficult issues there. One was the trying to get transparent instrumentation, and the other was trying to look at these different models. The way we approach that problem has two main parts. One of them is what I call the problem-posing programming paradigm, or the problem-posing interpretation. In every programming language, you have a notion of an information service request, which would be a function call, a message send, something you want. In every programming language, you have a notion of an information service provider. That is the function definition, the method definition, the external library function, whatever it may be. We use those, we connect those by using the same name. But there's no reason why that has to be true. If we make that separation from problems and resources, we can do all kinds of flexible mappings in between. And that's really the essence of this whole interpretation. We separate problems from the resources we can address them. Lots of different kinds of flexibility, from problems to resources, even different mappings to different contexts. I'll show you a little bit more about that in a minute. Now here's one consequence. We can use the same code to program in our models. If I have a model of a system that is using code, I can use exactly that same code as a different interpreter. So that allows me to migrate code from model to system using this mechanism, which I'll say a little bit more in a minute. The basic idea there is that we will know at least correctness properties of that code, something about the timing properties, and Phyllis will always kick me if I forget this part. You still have to test it at the end, but you have some more confidence that it'll do what you want. I'm done once I prove it now. But okay, now, if you separate the problems from the resources, you still have to have some way of connecting them back together again. We use the knowledge base. Very simple-minded knowledge structure. Maps the problems or the resources in the context. It lets me use different mappings for different contexts. The data describe the pieces, that is the resources. There are processes that do the integrating, and here's one of the things that leads to flexibility. The processes that do that integrating are also resources. They are also described, they are also selected and applied for different contexts. So this lets us study the integration infrastructure explicitly and allows us to retain the flexibility where we need it. The idea here is that if there's only one resource that applies to a problem, you make a direct mapping, you're done. It's exactly the same as it used to be. If you need the flexibility, you can't have it. That was the reason we did this in the first place. We described wrapping in a bunch of other papers. There's some references at the end of this talk. There's some references at the end of our paper in the proceedings. Feel free to look through those for details. We're really only going to use three of those properties for this talk. One. Reuse without modification. We can reuse code without changing that code at all. And in the space business, we have programs that are 8 million lines of code and all the authors are dead. It's that old. So the question is, nobody wants to touch them. because they're very complicated. So what do? Technique we'll call, function call diversion. I'll describe that in a minute, right after this. Migration of code from model to the system, multiple resources from the same problem. The same line of code can go to different resources to do different parts of this modeling process, and I'll say what those are also next. And then computational reflection. Replace any of the processes that we use with other algorithms. If you have a better planner for your application domain, you can use it. You don't have to use ours. You can replace any piece of the system, not anything. No part of the system is privileged. That's our way to cheat and not have to make any choices. We've had to make some choices, but this ability to replace them means you can replace them with others. Okay, reuse without modification. Remember, tomorrow you're going to start writing more legacy code. All code is legacy code. Sooner or later, somebody's going to want to do it. So we use a process we call software disintegration to identify the points at which you need flexibility. Very many large packages of software have useful applications in certain contexts, and you're trying to use them in a somewhat different context without rewriting the whole thing. So you get these extra little pieces. What we're going to do is we're going to identify the points where you want to introduce flexibility. Let's say this context can't use that algorithm, it has to use a slightly different one. The cost? Writing your compiler. I mean, it used to be compiler writing was hard. Now it's not. It's like a master's level problem. You write a new compiler for your language. You take those function calls, and instead of using the direct function call, you call out to our wrapping mechanism to do the mappings, context checking, and the rest of the compiler can be exactly the same. So define the wrappings to divert the function call. Let me show you the picture. Old system, call a function from various places, here's the function. New system, the compiler, instead of compiling that into the address, the usual address stuff, it calls a study manager, which is our planner, our default planner, with the function and the argument. The study manager goes through a series of steps and then either calls the original function, if it's in the context where the original function applies, or it goes off to something new. This way I can add new functionality to a complicated system without changing the original system at all. And in fact, because I have a new compiler, I can even do tricks like adding little timing delays so I get identical timing if I want to, if I need to. So, divert the functions. You can map to the same old function when it's appropriate context. So I get code reuse without any change in code at all. And that's a really useful thing for some applications. Second piece, multiple resources from the same problem. Since I'm mapping problems to resources in context, and I make up that knowledge base, I make up that mapping, I can have different contexts mapped to any number of different resources. So for example, let's take the code you're writing in your model to do testing of a system before you actually build it. One version of the resource that responds to that code, basically you interpret the instructions in the code as problems and map them to different resources. One of them is nothing more than behavior assertions in a formal model. In other words, your subroutine is its formal specification. The resource that you use for that is that formal specification. You can do all sorts of theorem proving and other formal analysis in the modeling space. Another version in a different context has the basic machine code with a whole bunch of timing information in it to be used in a simulation. Same original code, different resource. Of course, it's up to you to make sure that those are compatible implementation, compatible resources. That's still not completely trivial. But the original problem, the original program you have written is the same. That's cool. And another one is just the basic machine code now isn't executed at all. It's simply inserted into a system image. It's building the configuration, which you can then run on your machine. So the idea is you don't have to write three completely different sets of code for the algorithms that are the main part of your interest. You do have to write different interpreters for the different pieces, but now they're much smaller. And they live in a context that makes the whole process simpler, says me. But then I've been practicing doing this for a long time. But it lets me take that code and look at the timing properties here in the simulation as we build it, as we learn more about the execution environment. one of the things that happens very often is the execution environment comes back to bite us, like the car on the ball, for example, or the wind, or any of a number of other unmodeled effects. And you figure, well, I can just write it so that if that happens, I can fix that problem. And I can fix that problem. And you finally end up with what happens in the space business. You have a lot of very simple problems. You have tens of millions of very simple problems, each of which you can address separately. And we don't want to do it that way. That has some limitations, patience and budget. Computational reflection, the wrapping processes, which we call problem managers, they interpret the knowledge base, they pick out the mappings, they apply the resources, and assess the results. Every one of those processes is a resource which can similarly be invoked. What the wrapping implementation starts with is a set of defaults, but all of them are also resources, so you can replace them if you want to. Okay. In the paper, there are very short descriptions of five applications. They're all from other conferences. And in here, I'm going to talk about two of them. I'm going to show something about what their infrastructure style was and then how you can do it with wrappings. And then that'll be the end of the talk. So the reference here is in, references are the same references as in the paper. Basically, it's an architecture-based adaptation framework that does what they call meta-adaptation. In other words, you're building an adaptation process out of pieces, adaptation components called composable adaptation planner. And you're building different, you're combining different groups of those for different applications, which is why they called it meta-adaptation. Their issue is they have composition of specialized adaptation modules and conflict detection and resolution among different adaption plans. Because it's easy to have different ones of these processes intend to use different plans to do the adaptation. There is a non-trivial part of this is this conflict resolution. They have six types of modules. There's some that detect the important conditions that either require adaptation or find anomalies or various other weird things that happen. The adaptation actuator just invokes the composable adaptation planner. There's a basic runtime cycle that keeps the system going. And there's a couple of other things. Now, these are all still hard work, and they do have an issue of defining what the actual planners are for a given application and how to do conflict resolution therein. In their paper, they have a particular application where they do that. Now, to do wrapping, what we would do is we would take all of those management modules, all of those adaptation modules, and define them as resources. And then you could have many alternative choices for each one of them. In other words, you have all of these modules in the same system. You are still collecting them together the way they do. You are still using them the way they do. But now we have all of them in the same system because then you can have a common experimental framework. You don't actually have to have only your current choice for design decisions in that system. You can have all of them. Choose different ones in different contexts. And that turns out to be extremely useful because almost all of these, when you make different design decisions, you have one or two things that are different and a whole bunch of other stuff in the system that's the same. And trying to write a completely different implementation that differs 30% from another one is really annoying, if nothing else. The wrappings in this case, these are the knowledge base entries. They would contain the selection criteria for the different caps, the different planners they have. According to, typo, spell check won't catch it, context and adaptation problem in hand. And you can compare different conflict resolution strategies. One of the hard parts about many conflict resolution strategies is they're kind of infiltrating all of the rest of the system, all of the rest of the parts being resolved. And here you can keep them separate somewhat. Common experimental framework turns out to be really useful. Okay, another one. This is a bunch of control loops, and these guys are talking about building systems that have a lot of control cycles that are all operating concurrently, doing various parts of the problem. And you can think of them as flinging off data at each other and organizing it in order to do certain kinds of control problems. Each of these control loops has basically the same structure: collect, analyze, decide, act. There are hundreds of activity loops that various people have described, and they're all quite similar. This one is a simple way to do it. There's an old OODA loop for anybody who has any military history knowledge from 30, 40 years ago. But basically, the idea is figure out, collect the data you need, do some analysis, make a choice, and then do it. The mechanisms for mapping the provided goal model into a collection control loop. They do have a particular language for goals and a particular way of elaborating that goal structure into a certain form. And this strikes me as being really hard, but I didn't see it. I could not follow enough of the explanation, but basically the idea is they can also change those goals at runtime. And the process for doing this mapping is also controlled by a loop of this sort. So it does have a certain kind of reflection in it, which is quite nice. Again, a wrapping infrastructure, all of the pieces, the models, even the languages, the strategies, the control loop strategies would be implemented as resources. Again, alternative classes of each of them. They've picked a particular set that works together well. They haven't pulled the abstraction level to say, what is it that makes those work together well, or could I do that with other sets of things? Again, it's the control loop, it's the same process. OODA loop, there's a bunch of other activity loops that actually makes this system naturally implementable with wrappings because it already has the style of the loops. You can add timing information for a simulation if you want. And again, as above, if we put all the alternatives in the same system, we get this common experimental framework, and we can study these things in various combinations. Now, none of that study requires the use of wrappings, but wrappings makes it simpler to do, says me.
Okay.
I claim we can examine the correctness and timing properties of embedded software as we develop the system from models to code. And of course, there's another step in here that still exists, and actually try to run it. Models can produce at different levels of detail with refinement mappings and with simulation for transparent instrumentation. Simulation is the only way I know of getting transparent instrumentation because you have fake time. You can do whatever you want with it. Wrappings provide a natural way to implement the activity loops, context-based selection of resources, alternative processes, management of experiments, same code in the simulation in the target program. That turns out to be extremely useful if that code starts to get large. You still have to do the hard work. We're not doing any of that for you. You still have to do the hard modeling work. You still have to do the hard implementation work. Wrapping helps organize the results. And that's why we like it. Okay. Yes.
Probably very many times. You can model each resource in separation, and when you put them together in a particular context that you've never seen before, you might have a...
Right. One of the ways that we address that is by making the knowledge bases extremely simple. The wrapping description doesn't say, here is all of what this resource will do. It says, here is when you use this resource and how. But it's not a specification of what the resource does. That is hard. In fact, we have a basic loop, which this is the activity loop, just like the one in the previous study. And this is our idiot planner. It match resources. See, the wrapping knowledge base says, what problem can I be used for? And what resource parameters, et cetera, do I need in order to do that? So this process picks out wrappings of resources that say they can address a problem. This does the negotiation to get the parameters right. This picks one. There may be several left. This adapts the resource to the problem at hand. This advises the poser, the problem poser, because very often that's the last thing you ever hear from a system. I'm about to try this. and then it applies the resource. This one actually does the application, whatever it is, and it sets the results. And then this whole series of steps, every one of these is a posed problem which can be selected in the usual way. So we could change what this planning process does. But because this and that, the resources that do those are the ones that read the knowledge base, you can have an arbitrarily complicated knowledge base or an arbitrarily simple one. Oop, there. That's an example of a wrapping for a resource. It says this resource can address that problem with these context variables. Here's how you map the parameters, and here's where you find the code.
So does the problem solver, is the problem solver also able to split the complicated problems into smaller problems and then pick resources for those
problems? Yes, but you have to write it. What happens is if you have a complex problem and you want to decompose that into simpler problems, that's still a resource that applies to that problem. So if you have any kind of problem decomposition solution methods, you can use those. Basically, that would end up with, this would be the complex problem, this would be the planner problem, and the result would be to provide a network of other post problems. What we've done is if this planner is the world's stupidest one line, no backup, try it once type planner, because that's the bottom level. What we try to do is then let you use other planners to study a problem once it's been posed, if you have another planner for your particular domain. We try not to get in the way as much as possible. So the answer is yes, sort of, but you have to do the hard part. Well, one of the things that can happen when you go off to pose a problem is you can start bringing in resources that weren't in the system before. Now, we have to define the problem space. That's top down for now. We have to say, here's the kinds of things the system is going to be able to do. On the other hand, since it's a knowledge base, we can change that at runtime too if we feel like it. We just don't know how yet. So at the moment, the definition of the wrapping knowledge base and the set of resources, that is top-down. On the other hand, some of those resources can be organized in a way to produce bottom-up behavior. We have not gone in that direction thus far.
What you are doing is you're inserting into your system a kind of infrastructure which is responsible for reconfiguration.
Yes.
What does it do to real-time?
Well, one of the reviewers asked that same question. For a bunch of good reasons, but this takes time. Flexibility takes time. And one of the things that we have is a notation in which to describe all of these resources for which we can use partial evaluation. In other words, if I only have one resource that can apply to this problem, then it doesn't do any of this stuff. It makes a direct link. But no matter what mechanism you use, if you have flexibility at runtime, it will cost time at runtime. If you don't need the flexibility at runtime, you don't have to have it, and you can actually compile out all of this mechanism.
But runtime is not equal to runtime, that there could be reconfiguration time, in the sense that if you stop all the actions and then now it takes time to think, and then you switch on all your reconfigurations, and then it's real time.
Yes.
But what? Even in the second case, what is remaining? Something has to be remaining, which is for observation, for example. You have, in parallel to the real execution, you have to observe in order to be able to react eventually.
Yes.
So there's a tiny part which you cannot abstract away.
One of the, this particular, what we call coordination manager, has the read eval print loop. It's a very simple single line. There are other coordination managers that have it will have start up a series of parallel study problems or a one and a watcher and various other examples of those things to use the same mechanism to start to work on some of those problems. But we haven't tried yet to say how fast can we make this go.
Okay.
We have not tried that.
Because I don't care.
But I'm going to make you do it.
Yes, if you make us do it.
Because
I got to run those stupid cars.
Yes, that's the proof of the science.
Yes.
The test group made comment. One of the
project, actually, maybe we can discuss a bit offline. European project, so what they are doing, actually I'm the project manager. This is a large scale integrated project, which is about 14 million euro, the funded project, 3-year project. So what we are doing, we are doing the reusability of object. Mm-hmm. So that means we are extracting the real object in the resource, we extract the resources in the virtual domain. And then in the virtual domain, we are calling the virtual object, okay, which is the abstract resource of the physical object. And then after that, in the virtual, then we are making another level, we are calling composite virtual object. So composition will be done, one object can have many multiple compositions.
Right.
And composition is done based on the application and user requirements. So that's like the mm-hmm. where we define the problem. So if the user, a certain user request, some application request, some group of the object, and this object from a composition virtual object. So another application can form another composition virtual object. So this is the way we are with the reusability of resources, physical resources, is one of the main goal of this, the whole IP project, where we are also being the cognitive intelligence, being the cognitive capability to how we do that. So this is a very huge project, actually, dealing on that problem.
Does the application have to know which resources it needs?
No, application doesn't have to be. That's the problem. We are decoupling that, and we are the knowledge. We are also creating the real world knowledge in knowledge domain, so that this knowledge can be also grow over the time. So
one of the things that can be in the wrapping is descriptions of requirements, things that are required in order to use this at all, and you could also put in resource descriptions or constraints on resources that are needed for this thing, so that you could do an intentional version instead of extensional.
If I give an example, like an application said that if a person fall down, I need to make an alarm. So the application said that, okay, what kind of resource I need? So, and then the person fall down, but the alarm was not working. But what sort of other virtual objects have a similar kind of resources? Maybe that your car can also make the noise.
Yes.
So then pick the car.
When police motorcycles come up and rev their engine instead of putting the siren on. This certainly isn't the only way to do this kind of study, by any means. We found it to be convenient when we first started doing it back in the space business about 20-odd years ago. And it has extended to a lot of interesting other areas. That's why the semiotics comes up. Because all this stuff is still symbols. And I'll claim that most of the rigidity in using a computer is because the symbols are stuck being based on zeros and ones. And if we can do something different, we can do something different. But that's not part of this conference.
We have a time problem. We're running late. Thanks again, Chris.